Thank you very much, comrades from Salgao, honorable councillors. Invite you then to make your presentation. Hopefully, Misa is around. Take us through, as I've indicated, really aims and objectives, all that, mission statement, vision. They don't change easily, they take years. And then I hope that every member knows what are the critical areas, fundamentally, that you need this committee, because I've read your presentation already. And then what are the critical areas that you want to present for the committee to consider? Again, bearing in mind that these are members of parliament, they're making laws, they're overseeing the executive. They do many other things, but generally, primarily, they're lawmakers, based on the policies that are agreed by the chamber, also decision taken by the chamber. Let us invite you, colleagues from SALC, and then, okay? We know that you are working very hard, and we are there. General meeting and they elected a new leadership, I'm told. I thought members were invited. Mayhem didn't attend. Who didn't attend? It seems no member attended here. Dao didn't attend? Eh? This is doing what? Which one? Oh, okay. I thought that we were busy in your farm. Okay, now thank you very much, colleagues. Let us invite Salka to lead us. Again, colleagues, take us on matters, high issues. What are the fundamental issues? What is it that you want to recommend to the body of lawmakers? And then that is very helpful for us. Then all other things, of course, we've got unqualified report. Audited financial statement. It seems you have been doing this for some years now. We have improved a lot. Just take us through what you want us to do. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the committee. Chairman, my name is Subhash Bhade. I'm a member of the NSC of SALCA. Let me just formally table to you the apologies of the Chairperson for reasons you've already explained. And so is the case with the CEO and the Deputy Chair of SALCA, Councillor Nawa, all of whom are still attending to responsibilities at the Habitat 3 conference. Again, also just say to you, Chair, that we are in a transitional period, having concluded the local government on the 3rd of August. The Constitution of SALCA provides a transitional mechanism in the year of an election, insofar as it relates to the incumbent NEC. So the NEC, as we have it now, will continue to lead the organization until we take it to a national conference, which is scheduled for November this year. That does, however, mean that a number of members of the NEC who exited the system, the local government system, in some instances unable to discharge of their responsibilities because they would have taken up other responsibilities elsewhere. And that should account for why we just have myself as the old NEC member. It's out of no disrespect to the committee. I am joined by the acting CFO, CEO, as well as the CFO and a team from SALCA head office, as well as our parliamentary office here. Then, Chair, just to move, in our last appearance before the committee, there were two matters which had been raised. I want to just clarify that, those two matters being that of the issues around the CEO salary package, and then there was a matter that arose around the funding, the demarcation funding, which SALCA had asserted was not sufficient. I can confirm that on both of these issues, we have provided the committee with an exhaustive, or at least in the instance of the CEO salary, we have provided the committee with an extensive response thereto. I'm not going to go through the contents. Of course, if the questions, we'll be happy to respond to any questions the committee may have in respect of that response. And then secondly, on the issue of funding, The Finance and Fiscal Commission, the FOC, together with SAGA, have concluded a comprehensive paper on the cost of mergers. There would have been reference to it in the previous presentation you heard from the demarcation board. Just to put it into context, the COCTA had, through DORA, provided something to all of 300 million rands to fund the, I think the figure was 13 odd mergers, or municipalities affected by mergers. Just to put that into context, that 300 million rand, the city of Swanee in the 2011 merger, that bill sits at about 1.5 billion rands. Now, granted, the city of Swanee is a metropolitan municipality, it would look very different in a district or a local municipality, but that just provides some indication of the context or the scale of the cost, the full cost of mergers that has to be much more, has to be interrogated much more deeply when matters of demarcation or a demarcation is addressed through government processes. Then, Chair, just on the actual presentation of the annual report, we are presenting the year four of the 5-year period. So we are bringing the term, if you like, to close. I just want to refer you to page 8 of the slides, and that just depicts the performance. So if you look at that slide, I think that's a very telling picture. So when the current leadership assumed in 2011-12, that's how the performance had concluded in that year. And then you can see over the 4 years that follows an incremental improvement in the overall performance, both on the performance side, but also critically on the financial position of the organization. And I can confirm to you, Chair, that the year under review is the second consecutive year for which SAGA received a clean audit. Clean, no methods of emphasis. And the financial position of the organization has also improved for the better. At this stage, I'll hand over to the acting CEO, who will take you through the detail or summarize the approximation of the performance, and then the CFO will deal with matters of financing of the organization. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and my greetings goes out to honourable members of the committee. We are mindful, Chair, of your direction that we have indeed circulated the actual annual report together with the detailed presentation. So I'm not going to start on page 1 and 8 and end with page 111. I will merely highlight what we would want to present to you as some of the key things coming from South. And perhaps to paint the context that you would find the report in, Chair, it's been indicated by the NEC member that as SAGA, being a membership-based organization, which is linked to the political term within local government, we always plan for a 5-year period. And so after the 2011 elections, we plan for 5 years, and the 5 years end effectively at the end of this financial year, being the 2017. So we are finding ourselves in year four of this particular term of office, and in terms of the organizational structure, towards the end of the term of office, being the final financial year. But for reporting purposes to yourselves, year four of the 5 years. And when one reflects on how we have changed things within the organization, the performance plan for the year under review has been focused more on ensuring that we as an organization streamline our plan towards greater performance, and therefore we have seen a greater reduction in the number of strategic goals that we have, the priorities that we've identified, as well as the outcomes. So instead of having multiple and sometimes duplicated strategic goals. We have very clear 7 strategic goals followed by 4 apex priorities and then 36 clear outcomes. And when one looks at this particular slide, Chair, just painting the context, right at the top of the slide, you would see the what defined the 5 years that defined us, the 5-year strategic plan that we have adopted. We looked at the mandate of the organization as given by members. We looked at what were the contextual processes at the time, and that then defined what we were going to do over the 5 years. And we are going to go through this very same process over the next few months as we are ushering in the new term of office. We also, as an organization, will go to our members at the end of November. Members will define what we will do over the next 5 years. So we will similarly come up with a 2017 to 2022 5-year strategic plan. The goals are outlined on the left side of the slide, the 7 goals, very clear what those goals are. And the priorities are at the bottom of the slide. And then on the right, because the Back to Basics program followed the approval of the 5-year strategic plan, there is a clear link between all our goals and priorities and the Back to Basics program. So there's greater synergy between what the expectations are from local government and then also what we have been defined to do by our members. To touch on looking over the 5 years, whilst we're reporting for 1 year, you can see over the 5 years there has been greater improvement in the outcomes from a performance point of view. Where we were sitting a few years back at 84%, we've gradually moved to 96%, to 98%, and currently sitting in the current year under review, 14-15 at 100% performance. And if one looks at, and I'm not going to go through the details here, but merely to highlight for members of the portfolio committee, on each of the goals you will see in the slide, what we have done, we've presented to you what the problem statement is, followed by what the goal is that we would want to achieve, and then how we intend executing that goal. So you will see each of the 7 goals will indicate to you the problem statement, the goal definition, and then the goal execution. I'm not going to run through the detail. It's for your own benefit. But again, to highlight this particular presentation, this particular slide, which holistically presents over the 4 years how this organization has fared, with the most recent being the blue slides, the columns that you see at the back, and the furthest year being 2012, 2013, being the yellow part that you see. You can see a gradual improvement over each of the 7 goals over the last 4 years. But again, there's a context within which we are expected to do our business, Chair, and roll out the mandate as given by members. And that is really that what the white paper defines SALCA to do. It is really to play a leading supportive role in the wholesale transformation of local government. And in doing so, there are a number of developmental issues that we had to look at, and it's all outlined on the slide. Also, it is important for us to look at where we are from, because it is important to know that the ongoing work that we expected to do as an association of municipalities is also informed by where we are from. So we had started in 1995 with 843 municipalities. We have moved to 2000 to have a 284 municipalities. We went further reduced the municipalities in 2011 to 283 to 278, and now we are currently sitting with 257 municipalities. You can see there's a clear reduction. We just had a conversation in the previous presentation. There's a clear reduction in the number of municipalities that we have, but the responsibilities of the organization do not change. However, what is expected is the organization to do more. And we could, for instance, indicate to you, Chair, basically for your information and interest, that leading up to the 2016 local government elections, there was a clear expectation that Salva must play a central role around the transition from the councils in 2016, prior to 3 August 2016, to post 3 August 2016. And we had to play a role not only with the transition of one municipality to the next, but also around the discussion we had earlier where municipalities have been merged, new municipalities have been created. There was an expectation for us, and indeed a role that we played to ensure that on those new municipalities, there's specific support that is given. So prior, during, and post the elections, there's a lot of support that has gone to these municipalities. I think all of us sit back, and when the first council meeting happens and there's an election that takes place, no one appreciates the background work that goes into that being a successful election of a speaker, a mayor, in a council meeting. There's a lot of work that has gone into that, and as SALGA, we played a central role through the guidelines that we had issued for those municipalities. But the work does not stop there, Chair. We are still, as we are speaking, playing a role around the appointment of, in particular, the new Section 57, Section 56 managers that will be coming into those municipalities. So your municipal managers, your city managers, as well as your managers reporting to your municipal manager and city managers. So the work is ongoing, but it's a lot of work that we've done, Chair. This slide merely just indicates the constitutional legal framework with which we operate both as an association but also as municipalities. And you can see how we have moved from where we were in 1996 to where we are currently sitting with this CLUMA, the latest piece of legislation affecting local government as adopted in 2014. So the journey has not been easy, Chair, and I think it's important for us to take cognizance of that as we are looking at the performance of the organization. The following few slides, Chair, reflect on how our members have provided equitable and sustainable services over the period with our support, but merely to indicate that you can see there's an increase in the access, whether it's to electricity, sanitation, piped water. There's an increase in the access by households to across the board to those particular services. Again, Chair, the question that we barely ask ourselves is, as our members are expected to deliver services, do we have a common understanding of the complexities involved in delivering those services versus the costs of delivering of those services? So we have gone through, in partnership with the FFC, we conducted a study around the cost of municipal services, and I think it would be important for this committee. I am aware that members of the committee were present at the launch of this report a month back, but it would be important for members to perhaps read the report. We will make it available once again, and you will see what the implications are for local government when you closely look at the cost of those services. And merely to highlight, it is important that we should note that there are huge implications when we have new households coming up, both from a capital as well as an operational expenditure point of view for municipalities. And if one looks at the projections over the next 3 years, we are anticipating that we'll have just over 800,000 new households that will come up. And simply to say, it would be important for us to also look at what the financial implications, both CAPEX and operational costs, are for municipalities that would be responsible for those particular households. So there are clear recommendations that are being made, and I think these recommendations at the stance of this side is also relevant to the work that this committee does on an ongoing basis. We have also, the Chair, in partnership with FFC, COPTA and Treasury, looked at reviewing the local government infrastructure grants. So there are a number of successes that we have achieved. Needless to say, the inclusion of the maintenance grant for roads within the MIG is a key success, as well as the consolidation of the two water grants into just two grants, well, the water grants that we've had into just two grants, just to mention a few. Also, Chair, you have picked up recently in the media, particularly issues around Eskom and debts owed to Eskom by municipalities, and SALGA, we have also played a central role as a membership-based organization on behalf of our members in engaging with Eskom, and there have been a number of engagements, not only with Eskom, but also with NERSA, COPTA, National Treasury, Department for Public Enterprises, as well as the Department of Energy, to look at how we can resolve the challenges that we are faced with. And there was an MOU signed between ourselves and Eskom. However, we have not been able to reach consensus. And in our engagement with our members, particularly our metros who are seriously affected, they have given us a mandate to declare an IGR dispute in terms of the IGR Framework Act, and if necessary, take the matter to the highest level possible. So we have also indicated with the recently held budget forum that we do intend, on behalf of our members, declare the IGR dispute and take the matter from there. On the other goals, Chair, of the seven, each of them, there are key progress that we are highlighting in the presentation. I will not deal with every single aspect, but to say as an organization, whilst we focus on both the urban areas as well as the rural areas, it is important that we need to find a fine balance between the two. And you will see the programs that we have rolled out, particularly those supporting cities, but also programs that we have rolled out so supporting the small towns, your rural areas. There is a fair balance in supporting our members. And this slide is really just reflecting on the conference that we held last year, where we had identified 18 pilot towns, and we have been giving strategic support through an assessment that we have done on the state of the economy of each of those towns, and there's a report that is being developed on what issues are arising out of that particular pilot. On accountability and local governance, Chair, it is clear, and we have come previously to this committee indicating impact that we have established in municipalities, the audit committees that are functioning in municipalities, as well as the functional internal audit committees. If you look at this slide, you will see across the 278 municipalities, as reported at the time, we have now reduced it to 257, there is 100% establishment of impacts, audit committees, and internal audits through the support that we have given to municipalities as an association. Also around fighting corruption and maladministration, we have a good track record. Having started our work around anti-corruption through the launch of the strategy in 2013, and then further rollout of that, that has seen some positivity coming through, and we've just really highlighted some of the media articles that you've seen coming up, where there is a deliberate attempt and intention to deal with corruption within the local government space. I would fail in my duty, Chair, if I don't mention the issue around councillor support and in particular remuneration of councillors. While there is an outcry from our members that not sufficient attention is given to the subject matter, we can indicate that yes, it may not be enough, but there is significant progress that has been made around a number of aspects of council remuneration. And we are merely saying that whilst this progressive progress has been made, yes, there remains an outcry from members to address the issues around their welfare. Chair, we've also had the benefit of having a very close relationship with Parliament, both the NCOP as well as the National Assembly. And we are actively participating in both houses. On human capital, Chair, I'm going to focus here around the development both of the administrative staff as well as of the political component within our respective municipalities. And We launched what is known as the Salka Center for Leadership and Governance, and essentially the core mandate of that particular platform is to ensure learning, reflection and sharing amongst administrators, amongst politicians, and ensuring that we drive capacity development for all of those within the local government space. The slide indicates that over the past few years, we have developed over 23,000 counselors in terms of the different programs that we ran over the 5 years, but also a number of officials that have been trained. In the last financial year, 2015-2016, we trained just under 3,500 counselors and just under 300 officials. But most importantly, Chair, is that post the elections of 3rd August, we ran a very extensive integrated counselor induction program that saw across the country just under 8,000 counselors being trained on what the expectations are of them as counselors. So a very extensive 5-day program for each counselor, taking them through roles and responsibilities, the legislative framework, key municipal processes that they find. And it is merely a stepping stone towards what we see as a more structured capacity building program. So the induction was for a week for each counselor. We started on the 5th of September. We will be concluding it at the end of this month. Every single council would have gone through that particular training process. Where a council has not had the opportunity to go through the program, we will open up space for those councillors to indeed be inducted as per our expectations. It is an accredited program, Chair, and not only was it extended to councillors, but also included traditional leaders. So as part of the 8,000, we have also, in addition there, to inducted just over 700 traditional leaders as part of the program. And as I'm saying, it's a stepping stone towards a greater development of councillors, and this also slide just indicates what we've done in the past term of office, and we'll likely follow that in the next term of office. Chair, it's also important to note this particular slide. It's an indication of the work that lies ahead for us as an association. If you look at the turnaround, we have just over 9,300 councillors. And if you look at the breakdown, there is a huge overturn of councillors. There are new councillors in the system. And what it does, it places an obligation on this association of municipalities to ensure that we build the capacity of those councillors in order for them to execute their work as expected in terms of legislation, but also as mandated by the electorate on the 3rd of August. On the financial viability of councillors of municipalities, Chair, Goal 6, we have introduced the Municipal Audit Support Program, which is based on four pillars: institutional capacity, financial management, leadership and governance. And through the rollout of this program, we've been able to support municipalities on those four pillars. And we have already seen improvements coming through in a number of municipalities, as highlighted on the slide. And we've also seen, as a consequence, improvements on the audit outcomes that we have seen, comparing it back to as far back as 2010-2011 to where we are in the latest announcements for the 2014-2015 financial year. So you can see there's an overall improvement in the audit outcomes per province for municipalities. There are, however, Chair, still challenges that we find, and this slide merely reflects where we're having those stubborn challenges. 40 municipalities have been identified. They find themselves in what we refer to as the red zone or the ICU, and dedicated support has been given and directed to these particular municipalities, and we will over the next few years assess what results we are getting out of the support that we are giving to these municipalities. Chair, I think an important point that was previously raised in a meeting of this particular portfolio committee is how do we deal with consequent management? And you can see on this slide, all we are saying is that yes, there are audit outcomes, there are clear recommendations made by the AG on how to take corrective action. It is how we manage those consequences. So you can see there is an aggressive process towards ensuring that as an association, we ensure together with working with other partners that in fact the issues that are highlighted by the AG are taken forward and we deal with the consequences accordingly. The debt owed to municipalities remain a challenge, Chair. You said we must highlight some of the challenges. The debt owed to municipalities remain a challenge. 113 billion owed to municipalities, and it is broken down here per the metros, 56.7 billion to metros only as of the end of June this year, and highlighting there per municipality what the issues are. So it remains a challenge that we have. Around the organization, and Goal 7 in particular, Chair, focuses internally. So while Goal 1 to 6 is as an external focus, Goal 7 has an internal focus looking inwards into the organization. And the first thing that we have done, being an organization that is turning 20 years old at the end of November, we have looked at rebranding the organization. So you will see a different logo. You would see a different vision that we have as an organization, and it's to ensure that going forward we remain relevant, we move with time, and we then also take forward the issues that are relevant for our members. So the organization has been rebranded, and there you see our new colors, Chair. And we're not supporting any, the colors are not reflective of any other party. Or any other entity. It is merely informed by how we see ourselves as an organization of municipalities going forward. We've also improved the way we profile both municipalities and ourselves within the country as well as across the borders of our country. And you have touched on this, Chair. As an association, we have become an international player. We've played a leading role in the SADC region, they played a leading role in the continent, and we have now been given the mandate to play the leading role in the world body through the election of the chairperson of SAUGA as the president of the world body of local government. And we will continue to play that role going forward, Chair. Chair, I'm going to pause here, and there are about three slides, and I will have four slides that I will ask the CFO to speak to, which relates to the financials. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. May I send my greetings to the honourable members of the committee. The focus of my presentation is contained on pages 171 to 262 of the annual report, which is a full set of the financial statement. I think has already alluded to that this is the fourth clean audit that SAUGA had obtained in a row over a number of the unqualified audit opinions over the last 7 years. I think, in fact, I'll go through to the next slide. What I would want to focus on, notwithstanding that in terms of the financial performance, the organizational performance is adequate. Hearing, I will just zoom in on the key aspects that would detail the institutional growth and the financial position over the term that we're looking at, particularly now covering from 2012 to 2016. One thing that actually stands out is that about 4 years ago, had about 80 cents worth in current assets for every 1 rand in current liability. End of March 2016, that situation has turned around, wherein it's over 100% improvement, wherein we've got a current ratio of around about 288 cents for every rand of current liabilities, and with the asset coverage ratio having as well improved significantly from 7 times to 25 times. In terms of the total asset of the entity has increased substantially to 223 million at the end of 2016. One thing worth noting is the extent that the total liabilities exist, they have also increased by better rates that is far lesser than the increase in total assets, which overall in terms of the net assets or the community wealth that SALGA has for its members remains at 138.6 million. The cash equivalent that have also improved significantly. That also is a reflection on the faith that SALGA's membership have on the organization, particularly in its representation role and carrying on its mandate, particularly in funding the organizational performance that enables it, considering that for the year under review, 91% of SALGA's total revenue emanates from our membership fees. In terms of trade, in fact, because of the subsequent slides all talk about what I'm talking to, I'll stick to this one. Trade receivables have been also increased, but at a slower rate. This is in line particularly with the increase in overall revenue. One thing to highlight is that the payment levels for membership fees has remained steady over the period, particularly in the year under review and stood at 88%, as well as the overall receivables as a total percentage of revenue are still at an acceptable range of below 20%, which is sitting at about 13%. Chair, in terms of the organizational financial performance, because I'm not going to go into the detail which is contained on page 171 to 262. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, CFO, for the presentation. Honorable members, and, if there are questions that you want to put forward, this is your time to do so. Honorable Malan.
Thanks, Chair. I don't know where to start. Okay.
Start anywhere.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your report and congratulations again on another clean audit. It's very appreciated when entities and government departments arrive here with clean audits because it means that the AG can then verify that you are doing your jobs properly. I do have some concerns, and I welcome some input on them. Let me start with, you put up a slide, sir, and I didn't catch your name.
Lance,
you put up a slide about the APEX priorities and the Back to Basics program and so on and so forth. And I don't have any issue with the APEX priorities. I think it's very much in line with what SALGA should be doing. But I do believe that some of your outcomes are soft. I think they're a bit vague, I think they're a bit wishy-washy, and I think you need to actually get a little bit harder and more specific with your outcomes and your KPIs. And the reason I say this is, for example, training is not an outcome. Training is an activity. So to say we have trained 5,000 or 9,000 or 8,000 counselors is not an outcome. The outcome is, are they able to deliver their job effectively on the ground in the municipalities where they're working? So I think you need to drill down onto what the actual outcomes and indicators of those outcomes are. You talk in a couple of places in your annual report about SALGA policies. And I've been unable to lay my hands on those policies. They're not on your website. In fact, I do think your website needs a little bit of attention because a lot of the links are dead. So you go to download a document and there's nothing there. You spoke about the dispute with ESCOM, and I couldn't agree more that this is something that needs to be resolved. It's something that we've raised a number of times, Chairperson, in this committee, and I think we've had a couple of discussions with Selga about it. But I do think that you're a little bit out of alignment with the reality on the ground, and that is that it's not the metros that are most affected. It's the small municipalities. It's the Ditsaboltlers and the Swains and places like that, where the electricity is constantly under threat of being cut off for failure to pay their electricity bill. And we haven't resolved the issue of ESCOM's billing process. We haven't resolved the issue of the interest rates. So these are things that we really need to finalize and finalize quickly. And I think we need to take beyond the metros because it's not a metro issue. Sorry, to come back to some of your policies for a moment, and specifically your remuneration policy. I know we've addressed the issue of the CEO on a number of occasions, and I'm not going to drill into that again, except to point out that Mr. George serves as a board director on PRASA and attends no less than 12 board meetings a year, for which he receives a very, very generous stipend. And my question is that affecting his work in Selga? I also think that when it comes to remuneration, Selga's increases, and if I look at the increases that were awarded to the senior management of Selga, they seem to be in around about the 7.6% range. That's 1.6% higher than the collective bargaining agreement that Selga reached with SAMU and Imatu. So I think that if Selga was truly being honest to itself and to represent local government in its entirety, including the workers in local government, then your salaries as officials of Selga should be linked to the level that you negotiate in the South African Local Government Bargaining Council. Still a concern, and it's been a concern for a number of years with regard to that collective bargaining agreement, is the impact on the various types of municipality. In other words, it's very difficult for some of the smaller municipalities that are in financial difficulties, and you identified 14 of them, but there are many, many more that are in far worse situations than those ones. But that are unable to afford the one-size-fits-all approach to remuneration. Now, COGTA has just introduced a new grading system of municipalities that talks to the remuneration of senior managers, and I believe it would be appropriate for Selga to look at that as a model for increases going forward. In other words, to say grades 1 to 3, an increase of maybe 6%. Grades 4 to 9, maybe 5.5. Maybe so that there is a more structured approach to or a more differentiated approach to the remuneration problem that is affecting local municipalities. Then just two questions. The first one is, you have some 488 employees currently, and it's costing Selga 230 million rand. 488 employees, what do all those people do? Can we get a little bit of clarity on that? The second thing that relates to remuneration is advertising. Now, see in your annual report, and obviously this ended in March this year, but you have a figure of about 5.5 million rand for advertising under your expenditure. But I noted that in the period between March and August, there was a significant amount of Selga broadcast advertising. My question is this. Do you think it's appropriate for Selga, just before an election, to start trumpeting about specific municipalities. Do you think it's appropriate to say this municipality has done well, this municipality has delivered this, 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 and this before a local government election? Is that not interference in the political process? And then, Chairperson, just a final comment. Councillor Tau is not the mayor of the world. He was not elected as the mayor of the world. He was elected as the president of the United Cities and Local Government Association. He's not even a mayor anymore. And so I think we need to just be careful about congratulating him on being elected as the mayor of the world. Just while we're talking about that, subsistence and travel allowances for SELGA members, and here I'm talking about the people that attend your provincial meetings, your national executive meetings, but specifically councillors, they receive a remuneration from council. They are deployed by council to SELGA to represent the council on SELGA. Should they then also be receiving a stipend from SELGA? Because it's quite a generous stipend. I mean, it's a lot more than I get as a member of parliament. And I'm not, you know, trying to compare. I'm just saying that it's a generous stipend. Should they receive a stipend when they are being deployed to be there? They get a salary as a councillor. Just to follow on to that, should we not require that people who attend those congresses and conferences, and I'm not talking about your training sessions, I'm talking specifically about the executive meetings and the subcommittee meetings, should we not insist as SELGA that those people not be mayors and speakers of municipalities? The reason I say this is they attend a number of these meetings every year, and they are out of their municipalities during that time. Now, that has an impact on service delivery in those municipalities. So it's a question that maybe you need to give some thought to as to whether or not you should ask for some of the other members of the council to represent the council rather than the mayor and the speaker to necessarily be the representatives there. Chairperson, let me leave it at that for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I wish to add my voice to the congratulations that have been extended by the Chairperson to both SELGA as organized by the government board and for Pakistan for being elected the president of UCLG. I think this says a lot about how people elsewhere in the world recognize the role that SELGA and South African local government occupies in relation to contribution made with regard to a model of local government that is revered and held in high esteem across the world. So I think that's important. It's something that's worth noting and celebrating. Also to congratulate SELGA for the clean audit. For SELGA to have developed over the years become a much, much more solid organization than it has ever been. So one has observed growth and then development. I know it's very difficult, but the standards are high. You must be judged by your own standards. Let's keep on going. There's room for improvement. And I think that must be said. An addition. Always room for improvement, and then let's keep the standards up high, up there. I want to zero in on the HR aspect, the part of the report. I see there that it says there's 34 employees of Sangha that are regarded as temporary employees. It says that 24 of them are females and 10 are males. I want to know what that is, because in terms of the law, anyone who works for you for a period of 3 months, continuously for 3 months, thereafter become a permanent employee. So what are these temporary employees? Is this not in violation of the Labor Relations Act? If I'm sure we can look at it. I think it's very, very important because Sarga is going to set an example. We can't have a situation that's untenable. I'm not saying that this is the case, but I'm asking what are these temporary employees? I also noticed that they are not foreign nationals employed by Salga. That's interesting. But maybe the issue there, to be more specific, is what kind of a working relationship do you have with the organized local government in Africa? Sarga is part of UCNGA, United States Local Government of Africa. I know that in the past, we've had to, Sarga has had to, ensure that we play our role and make our own contribution to ensure that UCLGA become sustainable. That's in this relation to the overall international third issue that I want to raise is really about a matter that Honorable Milam has raised. As in terms of the total, I see they need 488 members, so employees. And I see that you have indeed done some breakdown of these. Others are directors and specialists. Others are program managers, managers for specialists, and so on. I would have thought, I'm sure it appears somewhere in the report, but it would be very useful just to comment a bit about who are your key management personnel in relation to programs, the programs that Sangha run, especially the outreach, and to what extent have these programs assisted to strengthen the municipalities across South Africa. There's an issue that ordinarily one would have avoided, but it is because it has been in the media, I think it's important to raise it. There's been some mentioning in the media that there's talk of a DA wanting to establish an alternative organized local government body. In other words, they want to have their own SALGA. Could we have just clarity on that? I'm sure Member Miller has requested an opportunity to also be able to act. If there's anything of interest that he wants to add as information. And lastly, labor relations issue, One couldn't help but notice that generally speaking, and I'm not saying Salga is perfect, generally speaking, there's been labor peace. I know that this has not come about overnight, but it's very interesting just to share some observations with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Allow me also to welcome the clean audit report from the SALGA and also to say that I'm also welcoming that the SALGA is running by the people who understand the issue of councillors and mayors, because are the people who are involved, daily involved with the work, the mayors and the councillors. Because the other departments, people are crying, they say they're managing or running by the people who don't understand the issue of the institution, which creates a problem. And maybe if the SALGA is running by the people who understand the issue of councillors and the problems, the daily progress. Also, I want to know from SALGA, SALGA says that assisting the councillors with the issue of training the councillors, then I just want to know that the training that the SALGA are overseeing from the councillors, that they can assist the councillors after the term of the offices. Because some of the training they just give, I thought maybe, as you see the politics of the nature of our politics in South Africa is happening. If you can see the last election that, if you can check, about maybe 60% of councillors didn't come back. Those councillors can, with that training that they get, they can get a work somewhere with the training that they have from SALGA in the institutions. And also the second one is that from SALGA, that there are many cases that are happening in municipalities, and the officials that council, that SALGA are overseeing and give them training. How SALGA can assist that they can reduce that cases that municipalities are taking to the court and they don't win it, because it creates that municipalities are losing some monies due to these legal issues that are taken to the court, they don't win that cases. Thank you for that.
I'll deal with the easy questions and I'll leave the difficult ones to the team. Well, just on the last question, and my apologies, Chairs, for going out. Unfortunately, nature called and it was shouting very loud. The issue of the debt, I don't remember that. I mean, the Code of Conduct of the Systems Act, in fact, makes it unlawful for a councillor to be in arrears for a period beyond 3 months. And one practice has been that as councillors assume office, They have to make an arrangement to settle whatever debt is owed to the municipality. The speakers of the respective councils have an obligation to enforce that requirement in the systems or in the code of conduct. So, I mean, where it does happen, the speakers of those respective councils will have to deal with that. I'm not sure whether we've done any work. I'm sure the team might want to respond to that to ascertain the extent of that problem, just particularly with regard to the breakdown of the debt by councils. The issue, Chair, that was raised by Honourable Masondo around the reports of a possible alternative establishment predominantly by DA-run municipalities. We have, our principled approach is that municipalities are members of SALGA. We have not received, suffice for one, any formal indication of such intention, except that which was raised through the media. The one was the Midvaal municipality in the Gauteng province. There was a subsequent engagement with that municipality, and our understanding is that in fact we have addressed the issues and the concerns have abated. So the Midvaal matter had been resolved. So there is a process further to engage the particularly the DA-run municipalities, but of course all of the new municipalities. But as I say, we have not received that any formal indication from any of the other municipalities. Obviously, we will continue that process of engagement because we don't want to create or precipitate an antagonistic relationship between any member municipality or any municipality, as SALGA is the organization that now represents the interest of municipalities. Then there's a question around the sitting allowance for councillors insofar as the governance structures of SALGA is concerned. I mean, I think the reality is that the councillors over and above the allowance which they receive as councillors do incur costs to attend SALGA engagements. And practice has been is that municipalities will stand in for that cost. And what the last part one iteration to the remuneration gazette provided that for governance structures, SALGA will pay that burden. So it takes the burden away from municipalities and places it on SALGA because member or councillors are discharging SALGA obligation. As to the question of mayors, councillors, it's always been a very contentious issue. At one point, even at the level of the NSC, there's been an ongoing discussion about whether members of SALGA's, at least the NEC, or even just the office bearers, be full time. So that, over time, I think without exception, all chairpersons of SALGA over time has been mayors of cities and metros for that matter. Including, he has been a mayor, that's the point I'm making. And it does place a burden on individuals. So the question that I think we've raised is, isn't the time we look at the SALGA arrangement from a constitutional point of view to perhaps create a regime where the national leadership, either the office bearers or somewhere along those lines, in fact, once they assume office, become full-time members of SALGA, including those, by the way, who sit, the 10 representatives of SALGA who sit in the NCOP. All are councillors originally and then have to assume this responsibility over and above, additionally, to what they discharge as councillors. The issue of the broadcasting ahead, I think there was a very deliberate effort in conceiving that program to ensure that whatever gets portrayed does not advantage or disadvantage any municipality. And in fact, the approach was that the principal approach is that we're strengthening democracy in the first instance, and in the second instance, that we reaffirming public confidence in the local government sector by profiling best practices in and amongst municipalities across the board. So I think the view we took is that we are advancing those two particular interests, and we're very cautious not to be seen to be favoring one way or the other any individual municipality. And then I think the last question I will attempt to deal with is the issue of the remuneration policy issue. The CEO is remunerated in accordance with the remuneration policy and does, as a matter of fact and course, serve on the board of CRASA. That, as is required under law, has been duly disclosed. And like any other South African, he is perfectly entitled to participate in that capacity, provided he has made the declarations, which I can confirm he has, and that any remuneration in respect of that is separate to his employment at SALGA. So it's never a consideration when you determine a salary package, where else do you serve, so that you perhaps discount what you're receiving there against your remuneration package. The remuneration policy doesn't make that provision. It simply says, make a determination as to whether, should you allow this to happen, you will receive the full value for which you remunerate that particular individual. And I think that determination has been made, and therefore the governance structures have consented that he is able to discharge those responsibilities. Maybe just one last one, and I'm really venturing into an opinion here rather than to express an authoritative view. And this is a matter that relates to a differentiated approach to salary increases. I think we must make the distinctions between levels, which I think is what the COCTA determination attempts to do, and a cost of living increase. As a cost of living increase, the cost of a basket, or as economics would call it, a CPI increase, is neutral to whether you work for a big metropolitan municipality or a little local or district municipality. So, and this is what the cost of living increase seeks to do. So if you get the levels right, the base right, and across the board, percentage increase in theory shouldn't be a problem. So that's the one part. The second part is the bigger question about affordability. And I guess that's a broader question. And I think SALGA has been raising this issue at a number of levels, the least of which has been the issues around the vertical division of revenue. Is local government receiving its fair share, or its equitable share of the nationally raised revenue to enable the sector to discharge its responsibilities completely. Just for the interest of the committee, the municipalities get 9% of national revenue, 12% if you include the indirect grants, and the total revenue basket, so including what municipalities collect, the total revenue that goes to local government is in the order around 18% of total revenue, government revenue. So, I mean, there's a strong argument at the bigger level that this affordability question has to be one that must be answered, but not in isolation from these bigger questions around how revenue is, the resource envelope, rather, is spread across government. So.
Thank you very much, Charles. I'll respond to the remaining ones and ask my colleagues to add where necessary. A question was posed around what is the value of the training that we do in particular for counselors, and whether post their term of office they can use that effectively. What we are doing differently this time around, and that's why we are referring to it as an integrated capacity induction, the counselor induction program, which starts with what we refer to as the entry-level foundation induction. That induction will be followed by portfolio-based training. So if a counselor is a chairperson of the Public Accounts Committee, Municipal Public Accounts Committee, you will get impact-specific training. If he's an MMC for finance, he's going to go through a specific training program on municipal finance, and so to the rest. Following that, we will also have an MFMA-specific training program, and then all of these programs are accredited programs. So through the local government CETA, they will get credits for those programs, and they can also use it towards credits for a tertiary degree or qualification. So what we are looking at is, we're not saying we are creating a space for counselors to spend 80% of their time studying. What we are saying, we are, because of the turnover that we have seen, we are creating a structured program to develop those counselors to execute their responsibilities, but also create them into people that could do things post their term of office. So we are really developing them to execute their role, but also for post being a life post being a counselor. So that's the structure that we place into the program as it currently exists. Honorable Masondo raised an issue that I tried to reflect on this slide, which I did not cover through my rush, but it's an important point that has been raised. We would see that within the local government sector, there has been labor peace over the last 5-6 years. The last threat we had was just prior to the 2010 World Cup. That was the last threat we had of strikes within the local government sector in 2010. Since then, we've had labor peace, and it's largely informed by the fact that through the local government bargaining council, we have been able to have an ongoing conversation between us as the employer body and the unions around the conditions of service of employees. And it's an ongoing discussion. And through that ongoing discussion, we've been able to resolve issues that are presented as challenges and together find ways of addressing that. And that's why we've been able to have peace within the sector. Both Honorable Masonde and Honorable Miller have asked the question around the 88 employees that we have in the organization. Perhaps to firstly, Honorable Masondo, the alleviate your fear around the temporary employees is that we also have a responsibility to develop young people or those who are unemployed but they have the necessary qualifications. So we are referring there to a group of people that are called interns. So it's a stepping stone towards bigger things. So we are creating an opportunity for them to develop themselves, and many of them find a way into formal employment within the organization. So it's referred to as temporary, but it's really the interns that we have within the business. And they're all young people, qualified people, but have not been able to get jobs, and we're creating a stepping stone for them. But on the broader number of people that we have, I'm sure you would appreciate that we are the Association of Municipalities who are organized at a provincial level and then organized nationally. So we have 10 offices. So we have an office in each province, and then we have a national office. So there is specific direct support that is given to municipalities on an ongoing provincial level. And then there's the overall policy support that is given from a national level. So it's the spread over, I'm sure you must look at it as a spread over 10 offices and not in one single office, and it's across the country. We do, however, detail the actual positions that we have, and you can see there's a specialist focus on the position that we have. A question that Bhagavan Sondra also asked around, how do we relate with our counterparts in Africa and internationally as an association of municipalities? We find ourselves in a very fortunate position. When as a bit of background, when SAUDA started off, we received a lot of support from international associations of municipalities. And through that support, we've been able to develop ourselves. But because we are better off than our counterparts, particularly within the African continent, we've also been expected to also assist associations in the continent. And we are, without boasting, we are undoubtedly the leading association in the continent. So there's continuously a request for us to assist other associations on very simple things that we might think is simple, but it's basic things to get them going. So ongoing, there's a good relationship. In the SADC region, we provide tremendous support to two associations in the SADC region, and extensively also within the continent. The other question that was posed, I thought I should add on to what was indicated by the NEC member around remuneration. It's interesting, Honorable Miliman, that you are raised this issue on the increase that we get for municipal employees to be the same for the association. It's not a new debate. It is an ongoing debate, and people will always say to us, so because you are negotiating salaries, you will make sure it's as high as possible so that you also benefit them. Remember, as the employer body, we negotiate on behalf of municipalities. So we could find ourselves, in fact, we will find ourselves in a conflicting position that we're not only negotiating for municipal officials, but we're also negotiating for ourselves. So we stand to benefit through that particular conflict. And that is the difficulty we have with that proposal. But I think, like many of the other inputs that you are making, I think there are, some of them are comments, some of them are saying, let's strengthen what we have in SAUDA. And here are key things that you should be looking at. It's something that would say, let's see if there's appetite to further look at those issues. The point that was made, and it's a comment, I'm assuming that we should perhaps do some cleanup around our outcomes, activities. I think it's a comment that is made on strengthening. I must apologize if you had a bad experience with our website. I would want to indicate that the website is, I think, is one of the better websites. Our difficulty we're currently experiencing is that we have gone through the rebranding. So we've also doing the rebranding on the website itself. So it impacts on the functionality of certain aspects. But the team, they are working on that as we speak. But what we will do, to put you in a better position, is that we will package the SAUDA policies and we will send them through for the committee's consideration. The other issues, Chair, I think are really common, saying, go and look at this. Yes, whilst we have touched on perhaps more the metro mandate to declare IGR dispute, we are mindful of the fact that it's not only impacting on metros, the ESCOM challenge. It in fact also impacts particularly much smaller municipalities, but I think it was said within the context of the mandate that we have received at a forum, but also it is a mandate that we have received from other municipalities, but I'm not specifically mentioned that. So it's not exclusively only to respond to issues raised by the metro. Thanks, Chair. I think I've covered it. If anything I've not covered, my colleagues are more than welcome to add. Thanks.
Thank you, Chief. Honourable Kuwaiti. I just want to add, in terms of the councillor capacitation and councillors exiting the system, This year also for the first time we developed what we call the SALGA social plan, and that is how we support counselors for those not returning. Now the social plan has three legs. It was developed in the financial year under discussion. The one, of course, is the lobbying we did for the ex gratia payment, that's in process. Then secondly, it's a process of financial training for counselors. So what we did for the outgoing counselors, we took that leg and we already did financial training for counselors to say, if you get your pension, if you belong to the Municipal Council's Pension Fund and you get to ex gratia, what are the factors that you have to look at going forward? And we will then also start in the beginning of this term sharing that with councils to indicate if you belong to a pension fund, if you save money, do scenario planning so that they can understand to at the beginning of the term start providing should they not return at the end of their term. And the third leg is then also what options are available for counselors. So we have identified institutions for those, for example, that want to start an own business. We speak to the IDC and we've identified a whole range of other support programs that they are for counselors that we've also made available to counselors. And that will all be shared with counselors at the incoming. As Lance has indicated, we've developed the Learnership Village, where each and every counselor's capacity building program, they will register on that once they've done their ICFP first stage, and we will track their development, and part of that development will then also bring the social plan to from the start sensitize them and prepare them so that you don't, after the list of prepare 3 months before your end of term, start preparing, but that you are placed in a position to start preparing for exits as you enter the system. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, just one addition that I think, to avoid a follow-up, the question was raised around the collective bargaining agreement and unaffordability for certain municipalities, particularly the smaller ones. If we look at the agreement, it does provide for an exemption. So there is a process for exemption, and municipalities must follow that particular process if it is an affordability issue. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think we are through with the presentation by Sarka. Now, I will meet with them. It shouldn't take thousands of minutes because we meet with them in the voluntary association. We meet with them, have discussion throughout the year. It's not the first time we're meeting with them. Alham.
Okay, can I just correct one misperception? And that was Honourable Masondo stated that the DA was looking to establish an alternative to SALGA. That is not a decision of the DA. It is not something that has been decided, and at this point it is mere speculation on the part of whoever is putting that forward.
Oh, okay. No, thank you very much for that. Thank you, colleagues from SALGA. I think the report was very helpful. And then the clean audit and all other matters there. Good luck for your term. We should allow them really to remain if they want to remain and to leave if they do feel that they had a commitment somewhere in town to go to attend to it, that will be fine. Thank you, Councillor Schubert and the team. We will see them as we engage you next year, have a discussion. Always come in and assist us to understand the challenges.